Ya lo hace. Pierna derecha, directo al arco. ¡Golazo! ¡Golazo!
The world of football with a soccer perspective. This is Soccer Today with Dwayne Mullins and Kevin Larame, live on the Sports Podcasting Network.
Good day, good night, and welcome to Soccer Today for Wednesday, January 22nd, 2020. I'm Kevin Larame, and things are back to normal. We're back on video. I can talk. I still have some difficulty opening my mouth, so if my pronunciation is even worse than normal, then you know why. But how you doing today?
I'm doing well. If you want to feel better, just ask me to pronounce French names for a while, and then you can all just sit back and laugh.
Can you pronounce Louvain? Can you pronounce that?
Louvain. Louvre. I don't know, something like that. Yeah, that's Tristan Borges' new team in the Belgium.
Exactly, as in OH Louvre, Tristan Borges, breaking news this morning. And if you want to know more, Dwayne and I went this morning and did a breaking news audio on Tristan Borges' transfer to the Belgium First Division B, to the Proximus League. We explain the system of the league, the pyramid in Belgium. We also talk about the team, the history of the team, the ambition of OH Louvain. You can find that and more on our $5 tier right now. With also yesterday, Dwayne, the Canadian Women's National Team's manager, Kenneth Heiner-Moller, did a conference call, answered the journalist's question going into the CONCACAF Olympic qualifiers. What is your take out of Kenneth Heiner-Moller's press conference yesterday?
I said this, I tweeted it, I didn't get much traction, is that you actually learn a lot more with his press conferences than you ever did with John Herdman. John Herdman was always very like dramatic and friendly and happy and all that sort of stuff. And you went away from those press conferences feeling good, but you didn't necessarily learn much, to be honest. Whereas Kenneth, in his Scandinavian way, is a little more, not blunt, because he's very positive, but a little more candid, I think, is what I would say. So in terms of what I learned, I think that they're confident that they have enough to get through this tournament. I mean, he let it slip that there's five games to play. He said five, not four, which you have to win the fourth to play the fifth. So that would suggest to me that they expect to be in that fifth game, and I think all of us expect to be that. He suggested that they might experiment with three at the back, which was a pretty candid answer to a question by our friend Har out in BC. There's a lot of people on the call, too. That's what I learned. And that really speaks to the value of the five rings. And I don't just mean the podcast, but that's valuable, too.
You mean the Olympic. Yeah, you brand the Olympic qualifier. It does gather attention. I was also on the call, but with my state, I was on a muted call, just recording. And by the way, you can listen to the entire conference call, more than half an hour, of Kenneth Heiner-Moller on our Patreon page, patreon.com/sportspodcastnetwork. And what was interesting to me, it's also who was on the call from Lauren Armstrong of Now One Soccer and, of course, Toronto Star, Carmelina Moscato, Commissioner of League One Ontario Soccer, Women's League. So that was a very interesting call, and Kenneth really took the time, answered the questions, and we thank Canada Soccer for that call. Heading into the Olympic qualifiers, which will start in 6 days from now, 7 days from now, and it will be available on One Soccer.
Yeah, precisely. All the games available on One Soccer. Pretty exciting for the format to be there in its entirety. In the past, we've sort of had to scramble to figure out where to watch these games. Generally, the Canadian games would show up, but we wouldn't get much more. I mean, obviously, in the past, I've seen Canada games available only through streaming on the site, on the Canadian soccer site, which, you know, this is a stream site. It's an OTT, but a little higher quality than that. So it should be a good time there. Look, as I said, there's a certain value in the Olympics in terms of that branding, and it shows how important, how successful this team is, that they had as much attention yesterday. I mean, I was on a men's call not too long ago, and I think there was about five people on that call. There was maybe, 12 on the call yesterday, which
on the men's call, I can bet it was you, it was James Grossi, and a couple others.
Yeah, I mean, we used to laugh. I remember doing women's calls back before the bronze game. So like doing calls in the early part, like 2010, and it would be like, yeah, we might as well have been in the same room. It was like Squiz, me, Neil Davidson from the Canadian Press. Like it would be like three people on those calls. And now you're never sure what you're going to get. A lot of local interest too, obviously. And that's the Olympic brand too. You'll get reporters from dailies from, small towns in Canada where there's players from, because that's the interest. They're going to the Olympics, right? Now, there's still work to do, both in terms of needing to qualify, and this tournament is the same as the men's, if you don't know. You play your group stage game, which in Canada's case will be against the Kitts and Nevis, which should be a 2-inch putt, with all due respect to them. And then they will play Jamaica and Mexico, which are going to be closer to 6 to 8 feet putts. So they're not going to be... that's a golfing reference if you don't know. They're not going to be complete givies, but they should be makeable.
Thank God you explained it, because you lost me for a second. Like, pot, is there a draw there somewhere? No. But if you don't know, as you can see on your screen for the last couple of minutes, Group A in Houston, Texas, Costa Rica, Haiti, Panama, and the United States in the Women's Olympic Qualifying Tournament. And on Group B in Edinburgh, Texas, Canada, Jamaica, Mexico, and St. Kitts and Nevis. Kenneth mentioned in his conference call yesterday, Jamaica, we know a little about Jamaica, of course. We know more about Jamaica than St. Kitts and Nevis. And Mexico, it will be the most important game of this group stage. How difficult do you think it is for a young program like the Canadian Women's National Team? Let's not get the presence of Christine St. Clair distract us from this, I wouldn't call it a rebuild, but this new generation taking over slowly but surely with the Canadian Women's National Team. How do you prepare for St. Kitts and Nevis? It's been 2 weeks that you know you're going to have them in your group, a team that even when you Google them, even when you look on YouTube, even when you call your friends that might be living in St. Kitts and Nevis, it's not easy to get information on.
I think you just have to play your own game. That's a bit of a cliche, but it's also true in that case. The chances of them, this is the women's game. And this is the reality of the women's game, is there are, if you're ranked 127th in the world on the women's side of the field, with all due respect to the athletes that are doing their best out there, you are not going to stand much of a chance against a top 10 team. Even if that top 10 team in Canada's case might be a little bit artificially inflated right now in my mind, but definitely a top 20 team nonetheless. It won't be much of a contest. It could be a goal scoring affair. You would think that, no one asked him directly. And had I had a second question, I might have asked him this. I don't know if you would have got a straight answer. I don't think they're going to be purposely feeding the ball to Christine St. Clair in that game to get her the record, but maybe in the back of their mind, they might like to get her the record in that first game against St. Kitts and Nevis about a week from today. And look, it's just a matter of time in terms of that record now. I think everyone understands that. But, if it gets later into the tournament and you're playing to Jamaica, which played in the World Cup, we should say, and, this is St. Kitts and Nevis game, that's a 1 in a million chance that Canada loses that game. The Jamaica game is more like a 1 in a 50 chance, which maybe I'm being... I'm famous for giving my crazy odds with the women's game. 1%. I stick to it.
Famous. By the way, if you're brand new to us, if you don't know where that reference comes from that Dwayne just mentioned, back before the 2015 Women's World Cup in Canada, Dwayne mentioned to a lot of people dismay that Canada had a famous 1% chance of winning the World Cup. Turns out he was right. That's the reference that Dwayne is talking about if you are brand new to soccer today.
Yes, and I actually used math to figure that out and was inflating it a little bit. But nonetheless, I mean, look, the U.S. is the dominant team in this program, in this part of the world. And right now, it's not close particularly, and they should cruise to this. And what you really want to avoid and why this is so vital that Canada stay perfect through this group stage is that it's a one and end situation. There are no second chances once you hit that semifinal round. You must win that game. If you don't, you're not going to Tokyo. Period. And destroy it. It is unforgiving that way. And if there was any slip up in that group stage and they finish second, barring a miracle on the other side of the draw, they're playing the U.S. in the winner go home game. And I'm sorry, guys, but history tells us you're going home if that's the case.
Yeah, that's true. But we do not anticipate the U.S. to be in that. So Canada has to perform well to be able to finish top of their group. And for that, they need probably to beat Mexico, to be able to beat Jamaica and St. Kitts and Nevis. It's not even a question. You need to beat St. Kitts and Nevis and Jamaica, and then maybe the Mexico game results is not that important. So, yeah, 3 points against Jamaica.
I think the result will be important because you can't finish second because then you're going to play the U.S. That's the issue here.
Then it is. Then 7 points, what I meant is maybe a draw against Mexico. But no, Mexico's not going to lose to St. Kitts and Nevis. And to Jamaica, maybe. Mexico's level at the women's side of the game has grown leaps and bounds over the last, 3 years now that Liga MX Femenil exists. So we have seen a leap in the performance of Mexican women players. And we'll see if this year's a breakthrough. Famously missing the World Cup last year, but it was due to also a lack of, money and investment in the actual league. And so there was a lot more than just the actual World Cup last year and their performances that explained their lack of qualifying. I think Mexico is truly Canada's biggest challenge, at least in the group stage of the women's Olympic qualifying tournament.
Well, yeah, perhaps. Look, I don't dismiss Jamaica. Is what I guess I'm getting at here is they do have a world class player and then a bunch of other athletes. They have one world class striker, and that's at PSG, and a bunch of athletes. So that's not going to be an easy touch for them either. Canada's weakness, and this is the question I asked him, is really secondary scoring right now. You think back to the World Cup in the summer, and what you had is a team that was very difficult to beat. And I don't think they get enough credit for that, for myself included. They are a difficult team to beat. They are gnarly. They are nasty. They will play in your face. They are a very sandpaper team that defends very well. And you know what? That is something they deserve credit for. What they really have struggled with over the past few years is to find offense that isn't named Sinclair. And Sinclair is 36 years old, and she is slowing down. She's still great. She is. And if she was out there with some other people distracting from her, then she would be a very dangerous player still at the international level. But the reality is, and I think we saw this at the World Cup, that those teams can collapse in on her a little bit and they're not frightened of the rest of the players. So to me, the key to Canada in this competition is your Janine Beckys, your Jordan Huidemas, those kind of players. And Huidemas is a player that I've been touting as potentially not a replacement for Sinclair. That's unfair to her, but a player that can...
The heir apparent.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I don't think she'll... she's never going to get the same totals as Sinclair. No one will. If Sinclair will be the all-time leading women's scorer for generations because they just simply aren't that many goals anymore scored.
Because players learn to defend. Now defending and tactics are actually part of the women's game in more ways than back in the Abby Wambach, St. Clair days, and even Mia Hamm before that.
Yeah. No, Canada used to win games 11-0, right?
Just by playing rudimentary route one, booted in the box, headed into the net.
If you don't remember the Pellier game, Pramira, Evan, the coach of the Canadian women's national team.
That's a blast from the past.
Yeah, if you don't remember how he used to play, then count yourself lucky. It was awful to watch. Awful to watch those games. You know, you were watching it at an obligation. I'm being blunt now. You're talking about the he managed the team in the early, the mid 2004, 2005, 2006, around there, into 2008. And it was, it's beyond Route 1. It was like Route 0.5. It was insanely bad.
Not even the route. But anyways, it's a tournament that starts on January 28th. And if you want to listen to the entire conference call, once again, of the Canadian Women's National Team's manager, Kenneth Heiner Moller, you can find it on our Patreon page, available at patreon.com/sportspodcast. And after with the breaking news audio, talking about Tristan Borges, which we will talk about after the break, but also Chicharito right after this short break.
You are listening to Soccer Today. Follow us on Twitter at Soccer Today SPN and like our Facebook page, facebook.com/sports podcasting network.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.
And we're back on Soccer Today. I'm Kevin Laramie, joined by Dwayne Rollins. As always, we're back live every day, 11 a.m. Sorry for our couple days off of the live show. I couldn't talk, so we couldn't do a live show. But you know who can talk right now? That's Chicharito, because he's in L.A., and it's official. El Chicharito is now a member of the L.A. Galaxy in Major League Soccer. We've been talking about it for a few weeks here and there, Dwayne. And, of course, Chicharito is famous in the one of the most famous soccer players coming out of Mexico ever. That's a fact. Never truly panned out to all the hype surrounding him, but looking at his pedigree, looking at the level he's playing in, and looking at the age he's got, he's still not that old. And coming into Major League Soccer with the LA Galaxy, what's your threshold of success for Chicharito in Major League Soccer?
He's a difficult one to peg down. Look, he's played at a high level, and he's coming in from La Liga, where he wasn't starting, but nonetheless was still at a La Liga class. So you can't dismiss that he will be effective in Major League Soccer. He simply will be. To suggest otherwise is to inflate the value of MLS. But at the same time, he wasn't starting. He is a player that is a poacher, that does rely on service, does rely on using his speed to break down an offense or an offside trap. Ultimately, he likes to play right on top of the line and break in behind. If you think Chicharito's most famous moments, they generally involve him breaking in, you know, on a near breakaway or 2-on-1 or what have you, having broke down an offside trap, right? Like, that's kind of how you envision him. That could work in Major League Soccer, again, if they can get the opportunity to get him the ball. The question I would have is, are the Galaxy galloping? And what I mean by that is, are they overvaluing sizzle over steak when they need the steak much more? They're starving to death, but they're buying themselves a fancy plate type thing.
They're starving, and instead of buying the fishing rod that's on sale and it's going to feed them for a few seasons, they got the fish that was all shiny in the front of the window.
Yeah, they bought some sushi. And that maybe, you know, is going to make them some money. There's no doubt. I mean, look, no one is disputing the popularity of Chicharito. He is, you know, some argue the most famous Mexican walking the earth right now, right? And I'm sure that there are movie stars and soap stars and stuff like that in Mexican TV that might challenge him. But from a sporting perspective, it's probably pretty definitive that he is. He's not the best player, though. I don't think anyone would argue that has soccer knowledge, and no one really is, even the Major League Soccer cheerleaders, I'll be blunt about this. And there are a lot of people. If you listen to a lot of reaction to this amongst your usual suspects, you can hear the rustling of the pom-poms in many ways. There's a lot of people very excited by this, and I don't mean to dismiss their excitement. There is an element of that with any big player coming in. I have said this before, that I am not blind to the need to still have marketing push in this league, and this is a definite marketing push into a segment of the market that they have not saturated or have not penetrated, I should say, in the way that they would like, and that being the Mexican-American market. We all know that the biggest watched games week in, week out, all year long, are Liga MX games, not Premier League games in the United States, because of the Latin American interest in that league.
And so there's a few factors for that. And one of them is also like streaming, but no, you're right. And it's over MLS, over Liga, over Premier League, Liga MX, or Mexican national team games are the most watched soccer product on American television, usually most weeks.
Yeah. So I don't want to dismiss that. It has a value. I think that people that are saying it's, you know, the biggest signing in MLS history need to pump the brakes a little. He does definitely have a major impact in that market, but you know, his interest, well, for instance, in the country I'm sitting in, unless you are of Mexican descent, you're probably not get that excited by this. I'm sure that the tickets will sell very well in Toronto. There are enough people of Mexican descent here that they will, but it won't fly off the shelves like they will in most American cities, because it's just a different market, right? So, and that's the point being that Wayne Rooney sold off the market. David Beckham flies off the market, right? It's a much different.
Zlatan will sold it out to.
These are world players versus original. But he is a very big regional player, and he will have an impact that way. But look, on the field, Kevin, I don't know. I put a poll out this morning where the options, you know, as always, they were kind of like extreme on either end, like bad, good, and then two middle ranges. And I would tend to agree with the majority of the voters in the poll, which went with the second option, which was that he will be 15 to 20 goals, a very effective player in the league. The top level was MVP. The bottom was a bust. And then the other one was I had good, not great, which didn't get a lot of traction. And bust, barely anyone voted that. So most people don't think he'll be a bust. I think there's the potential for that. And yeah, not being dismissive of his talent.
Dwayne, that's why I was asking, what's your threshold? Is 10 goals for Chicharito enough to warrant the money and the hype being put behind him?
Oh, no. No.
You don't think he's going to get
10 goals? Would be an absolute disaster for him, I think.
Okay, so you need to go to Zlatan territory to between 15 and 20.
Yeah, Zlatan went to 30. But I would think that 20 would be a minimum for him to be considered a true success. He scored 15 or so and LA made the playoffs, then yeah, I'm willing to listen to whatever the argument was, however the other effect is. But, you know, LA's got more problems. They have no defense right now. Like, that's their issue. And this isn't going to prevent them from really addressing that once again. And until they address that, you know, we can say what you want about the Galaxy being a quote-unquote super club. I listened to Alexi Lalas's podcast this morning, and Alexi Lalas loves the Galaxy. He loves hype. He's Alexi Lalas. He loves what he loves, and God love him. He does it well. But he's suggesting they're a super club, and I would say that they might be a super marketing club. They haven't been a good, even a good team in Major League Soccer since about 2013.
Well,
so
if you go with the analogy of the sizzle of a steak, maybe they're a supper club. I'm kind of getting hungry now.
Sure. Yeah, exactly.
But just to go back to the level, the threshold of success for Chicharito in Major League Soccer, talking about the amount of goals scored. So I purposely ask you this question because here we go. Looking at his body of work in Chivas, of course, Guadalajara, that where he was developed and he's a youth player of Chivas, and then until 2010 he was with Chivas. 64 games played, 26 goals in five seasons, so you can see here. But we know him for his time at Manchester United from the 2010 season to the 2015 season. 103 games played for Man U, 37 goals scored. Then Real Madrid, a short loan, you're going to tell me, only two seasons and only 23 games played for Chicharito. That was a bust, only 7 goals. So he has been a bust at some point in his career. And it was one with Real Madrid. Then maybe his best stint of his entire career might have been with Bayer Leverkusen, 2015-2017. Let's not forget the Bundesliga. You have a couple of great teams, Dortmund, and you have, of course, Bayern Munich, those two great teams. But then you have a few teams that are way below Bayer Leverkusen and below the level of England or of La Liga. And it explains a bit why in three seasons, 54 games played, 28 goals scored for Chicharito. And then a transfer to West Ham half that season in 2017, 55 games played for West Ham, 16 goals. And only one goal in 9 games played in a two-year span, not fully two seasons, but with Sevilla. And only scored once in 9 games. So he has been a bust. He has scored at a limited threshold compared to what you're asking him in Major League Soccer. And if a player cannot score 30 goals a year in Manchester United when they were great, and in La Liga with Real Madrid and with Bayer Leverkusen, which he was kind of close, but not that much, I don't think he can score 30 goals in Major League Soccer either.
No. Well, yeah. I the service tells me again, he's just not a player that's going to create on his own. He's got the pace. He will get goals on the break. LA will probably play a little runny and will get him on the front foot and get him out in front and behind the defense, I should say, and he will probably get his goals. So I suspect he's not going to be like a, you know, 3 goals, when has he scored last kind of guy. But you know, I'm looking at his transfer market page right now, and you talk about players on the wrong, going down the wrong side of the mountain. His transfer value market literally looks like a mountain, and he is definitely on the bottom of it right now.
He's on the other side. The slope is going down. If he was a cyclist, he's descending the mountain. He's done climbing. He's on his way down.
No, he's almost back to where he started from.
It's almost way further down than he was. His value was up back in, you know. I do agree. And for me, that's the question. Did the Galaxy, of course, before that, apparently he was on the Chicago Fire discovery list, and that might have changed over the last 2 years. But before that, he was famously on the Chicago's discovery list. So Chicago had his rights, and they were negotiating for the last, 4 years or so. And he was like, no, I'm not going to Chicago. But is it too little too late for TJ Rito in Major League Soccer? You know what it reminds me of? And I'm going to use an analogy that might not seem to make sense, but it will in a second. Is it Pacquiao versus Mayweather in the boxing world, which still got a lot of publicity, still made a ton of money, but was a fight that was worthless looking at the sporting level? And when I'm looking at this, oh, great player for the Galaxy. To me, it's a Zlatan 2.0. They didn't win anything with Zlatan, and I don't think they'll win anything with Chicharito. Because it's 4 years too late. It's like Pacquiao Mayweather. You waited long and long and long and long enough that when it happened, yeah, it was great for the fans of either, but it wasn't really to determine who's the best, and I think that's where the Galaxy are right now. It's not to get Chicharito to be the best team. It's to get Chicharito to get the best bang for our buck, meaning we're going to make some special jerseys. We're going to make some Cinco de Mayo special jerseys and sell a bunch of kits and sell a bunch of subscription to our things and sell a bunch of Tuden subscription, and we'll have more airtime. We'll continue to... So it's more, again, for the sizzle, maybe, than the actual substance, the content, what's inside the plate, the steak.
Oh, well, yeah. Again, it's not the player it's not the player they need on the field, necessarily, if they were going to build the team like a proper... if you were trying to properly build the team. But I guess you're right. Had they got this guy in his prime, obviously he played at Real Madrid, Manchester United. If you got him at his prime, you know, say what you want about his time at Real Madrid, but he was still signed by Real Madrid. That's a significant measure in any player.
Is that an achievement in itself? Like, because I think it kind of is. If you're signed by the Galacticos, it kind of tells everyone your level a bit. Like, well, they're willing to sign you because they think you're one of the best 30 players in the world, and they want to put money on you. I don't know. It is like a trophy in itself.
There is an argument to be made that Real Madrid signed him partially for the same marketing reasons that the Galaxy are, maybe at a different level, and it sort of speaks to their ability to sort of add a player like that. He's like, he might be able to add something off the bench, and we'll sell a few more jerseys because they are a commercial enterprise too. But
I'll pad a few losses, and I'll look at it in business sense. If you are Real Madrid, you can only have growth in so many markets because you're already present everywhere. And maybe you're like, they realize in 2015. Like, one of the places where we could grow as a brand more than we are right now is Mexico. How much would, let's get Chicharito. Done. That was probably the literal meeting that took place in the offices of the Santiago Bernabeu some point in late 2015.
Yeah, look. I don't want to be dismissive completely. There is the potential that this guy, if he gets the right service, does have the ability to score a lot. You look at the quality of club he's coming from and you compare it to other players. And look, for the lack of a better reason, I'm going to call it the Giovinco test. Sebastian Giovinco, when he came to Toronto FC, there was no indicators based on his play in Italy that he was going to light up the league that he did, because he wasn't playing a lot. He was on a very good team and he wasn't playing. Now, this is a slightly worse team than Giovinco was on, but nonetheless, it's similar in that they're both bench players from a top five league. So I kind of use that in my mind. If you're coming from a top five league, I don't care if you're playing or not, you are starting quality in MLS when you come. You are have the potential to start if everything hits you right. So that's not completely dismiss the possibility of this being a home run. I think there's just a lot to be worried about. And certainly, I don't think it's where the Galaxy needed to improve on. If you look at their problems over the past couple of years, hell, they used to play games with a 5-4 last year, right? Like, that's the Galaxy. And I don't know if Chicharito has the same ability to create those five goals like Zlatan had when he was feeling it. Now, yeah, the other part of that is, though, Zlatan only felt it once every three games.
Like, who am I playing?
Well, put the effort in.
I'm playing Columbus on a Tuesday in Columbus? Yeah, I'm not going to do anything spectacular. Oh, wait, this Saturday I'm playing against LAFC on ESPN? Okay, time to pull out my hat trick.
Yeah, but Chicharito, he's well known for his effort. That's part of his game. It's why he's so popular. He is a trier in the truest sense. And when you're a trier with some skill, you get the popularity that you do. But yeah, so look, you go on Twitter right now, which is always a mistake. Really, it is. I spent half my life on there, and it's been a waste. But nonetheless,
you'll be on your deathbed, and St. Peter's gonna look at you, Dwight, and be like, "Did you know that you can have 20 years back of your life if you take out all the time you were on Twitter?" You'll look at him and be like, "Well, it was worth it after all."
Yeah, well, yeah, I could have cured cancer or something if I had not been on Twitter.
what's the expression? One of the worst things that can happen is when you die, someone tells you gives you what you could have been, like your true potential. So we'll get there. Like, yeah, you could have cured cancer. You could have fed everyone on the planet. You could have maybe made human beings live 200 years old. But what did you choose to do? You chose to talk about soccer on Twitter.
Yeah, congratulations. You are the foremost expert on the 2013 Toronto FC. But, you know,
I'm telling you, St. Peter, Danny Kuberman was terrible. Thorsten Frings is underrated as a DP in Major League Soccer.
No, Kuberman was. Frings wasn't. Anyway, moving on. So maybe one of our docs, we can do that.
Yeah, no, exactly.
All right, we're off the rails, but I do think that.
Yeah, you gotta have fun. Before we say goodbye for today, Dwayne, of course, Chicharito will follow his progress, and of course, I'm gonna be interested to see the amount of jerseys sold by the Galaxy, and it's a metric we usually can get in a few months, so we'll see. But if you want to know more about Tristan Borges' move to Belgium, you can listen to our breaking news audio show that came out earlier this morning. But Dwayne, in a one sentence or very short answer, Borges to Belgium Division 2, it's called the Belgium First Division A. But what's your thought on the transfer, and is it a positive transfer for the league and for Tristan Borges?
Yeah, the TLDR of this is that he is moving to a club owned by King Power, the owners of Leicester. So there's money behind an ambition. A team that has already clinched a playoff spot for promotion this year will play a home and home with the winner of the second half of the season. And it's an opportunity for Borges to contribute to a team that could be in the top flight in Belgium, which is a great development league, which could then potentially move him on. That's what I was told about Borges last year when I talked to some scouting people. Is they felt he had the potential to make a second move beyond this one that he's just made, that he could move to a second tier league. And then potentially they felt his ceiling would be somewhere around maybe France. And that would be a really good accomplishment for him. And he's on path to it still. And, you know, when they said France, it's possible he'd maybe it's Germany. You never know. He's a player that does still have potential. He is just 21. This is a good move for him, and it's a good indication that the league is open to selling and that people are open to buying from him.
And if you want to know more about this transfer, go to our Patreon page at patreon.com/sportspodcastingnetwork to hear our breaking news audio show on the Tristan Borges transfer. On that note, you can follow Dwayne on social media at 24th Minute, myself at Kev Larame, and this show at Soccer Today SPN Live, Monday to Friday, 11 a.m. We'll be back tomorrow with more of the world of football with a soccer perspective. And until then, as always, have a great soccer.
You can find the podcast version of all the shows we do on iTunes, Apple Podcast, Google Play Store, TuneIn Radio, iHeartRadio, and anywhere you get your podcast.